Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of those guys that a lot of you probably don't know about, Will Rajan, joins the show today. He is a teammate from back in our first couple years in the program, a great dude, a team leader award winner, as we have talked about with several of our guests beforehand. New dad and great Hawkeye, great friend. Hope you guys enjoy learning about another Hawk. Let's have a day. Let's go. Welcome in, fans, to the Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast. We are back for another episode with our guy, Will Rajan, one of our former teammates. I always, when I say former teammates, I feel like you're still a teammate. Yep. Like, you're a teammate for life, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you're rocking the Tiger Hawk today. But you're out in Maryland. What are you doing in Maryland?
It's a long story, but I took a job with Stryker out in Maryland. Represent, Kevin.
Oh God, I'm two to one,
baby.
I'm outnumbered.
Yeah, but I don't get it. I actually chased my wife out here, so I was coaching after I got done playing. So I coached on the circuit for like 3 years, and found my wife and decided, hey, I'm not really into the coaching thing right now. Might as well take a chance and follow her out to Maryland. And a bunch of buddies thought I was an idiot for chasing a girl across the country, but ended up working out, married her. So.
You just brought up
just had a kid, right?
Yep, just had a kid. First son was born 3 weeks ago. So
I was just gonna say, you're a dad, and that was the first thing. That was the first thing on my list to talk about is what is it like being a father?
I mean, it's incredible. I think the most like thing that the one thing that I'd say you really don't understand until you're there is just the sense of pride in something that you've done and in that person that you've created, and they haven't done anything. They're just there. They exist, but you just
they deserve nothing. They haven't earned it.
It's true, but you really just, it's like, that's the coolest. It's like, I mean, you can't explain it. You just feel so proud of that person. And like, I mean, there's lots of hopes and dreams.
You haven't fucked up anything yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
That's true. They're zero for zero. Wait. Right.
Yeah.
I love that. That's such a, the first thing that popped in my head is I think of Kevin having a kid and the baby just laying there with like a dirty diaper and Kevin going, what have you done to earn the changing of this diaper?
I want you to take some ownership in your life and clean up your own shit.
That's right.
We're pushing prowlers. We're pushing prowlers before you get fed. Little twerp.
Yeah.
Will, a lot of people, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but a lot of people might not know who you are.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the, you know, your walk on to the bone, like us, right?
Extra
and,
washed up.
And no one knew who we were until I started saying dumb shit on Twitter and then roped Kevin and Drake into a podcast. Yeah. Kevin, you're looking, for those watching on the YouTube version of this, Kevin is rocking the USA today. He is repping hard. And Kevin rarely tweets, and he sent out his USA tweet this morning. Are you feeling pretty patriotic, Kev?
I'm feeling great this morning. You know, we didn't have the best Olympics we've ever had. You know, we fell in some areas we usually excel at. But we were always leading the medal count, total medal count. We were down to China by 2 gold medals going into the last day of competition. We take out 3 golds. The win, the gold, the silvers, the bronzes, the totals. Team USA sweeps the board, baby. Let's go.
Hell yeah.
Gilman got a bronze, didn't he?
Yep.
Gilman got a bronze, yep.
The savage.
Did you watch Gable Steveson's match, the Minnesota heavyweight?
Saw that.
That was sick, yeah.
They're not going to stop talking about that in the wrestling world for like all time. Like that has to be the greatest match.
That guy, he was wrestling. It looked like he had just like he gave up and was just trying to hold on it for as long as he could.
He's just trying not to lose, man.
Yeah. You got out-athleted.
That's what happens when you try not to lose instead of trying to win.
It really is. Barstool came out with the shirt. It was like 12 seconds, Georgia 8, USA 5, and 0 seconds, USA 9.
Dude, big
I actually like it. Barstool's like coming out supporting the wrestling these days. Yep. They're big on wrestling.
Spencer was their first like official NIL merch deal.
I know, right? And then they came out with this Gable Stevenson shirt. It's like, I love it, man. Let's get wrestling more popular.
Portnoy's not dumb. He's a smart guy. Will, you a big wrestler? Were you a wrestler in high school?
I was, yeah. I grew up, I basically was in diapers and got put on a wrestling mat. So
okay, you seem like a wrestling guy. That mustache screams wrestling.
I just need it's the dad life, man. It just came in.
Yeah.
Sun showed up and the mustache started growing.
I don't
know. Is that how it works? Like if you have a mustache before you're a dad, you're like, oh, look at this little asshole who's just trying to be funny. But if you're a dad, it's like, oh, like this guy.
No, I respect this motherfucker.
It's a thing. I ordered my New Balances and everything, man. I can go mow the lawn. It's great.
Got some new blue jeans and everything. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Is there in 3 weeks, have you been able to discern any similarities between being a father and Division I football?
Yeah. I mean, just like you are being put through adversity, you know, like
constantly
being a Division I. Yeah. Being a Division I athlete, like that's especially a walk on, like you're always kind of like, all right, what's next type of attitude, like what's going to be thrown at me this day. And it's kind of the same thing being a dad, you know, you never know. You're always kind of like, you're worried about your spot. You're worried about your kid. And literally anything can happen like within, you know, the next couple hours. But yeah, that's probably the biggest similarity is it's just hard, you know, the sleep schedule and, you know, the worry and all that stuff.
You, you're from Durant, Iowa.
Yep.
Where the fuck is that? Town.
So if you were to go smack dab between Iowa City and the Quad Cities in Davenport.
Okay.
There's a little town called Durant. You know that world's largest truck stop that you go past? I grew up on a farm like that is right next to that thing.
Okay. So, all right. Yep. So that was like the Friday night meal was to go out to the truck stop and grab
yourself some Taco Bell, you know.
I stopped at that Wendy's many a time on my way home.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Good spot. It's a good spot.
Some lot lizards on the way too, Kevin.
Some what?
Some lot lizards.
Lot lizards? You know what a lot lizard is?
Lot lizards. No. Never dealt with a lot lizards. I heard there's some shady stuff that goes on at that Iowa ADL.
Yeah, they actually I think they recently, like because of that, they hired like more security force to like actually go patrol it because yeah, I think it was getting bad for a while there.
Because it's like a trafficking station.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's a major hub on a interstate.
Yeah,
that could be an issue.
Yeah. So Durant, Iowa, you're a wrestler all the way through high school. Clearly, you ended up as our teammate and a Division I football player. Mm-hmm. Curious if that was the plan, or was the plan to be a Division I wrestler? Did you even want to be a Division I athlete? Or what? Growing up, what did Will Ratchin want to do?
Well, honestly, I mean, being in that small town, you have the opportunity to, I mean, I'd say in Iowa as a whole, like you have the opportunity to do 4 sports in high school. And that's something that is like really rare to our state. There's not many other states that can have that. I found that out when I was coaching. So, I mean, I would encourage any young athlete coming up to do all this stuff. And at a school like Durant, it was small enough to where you could do all the sports, but you could be involved in, I don't know, choir, like whatever else you wanted to do too on top of it. You had so much. Oh yeah. You know, all that stuff.
Will's artistic. I went back and stalked the Instagram. He's not, and we're going to get into this too, but I want to keep your story going. But
yeah,
I seen some pictures of you up on stage rocking in like a band. You posted some artistic drawings of like fucking some superhero. Like you're a much more talented guy than I am. Let's say
I can't math good, but I can do fun stuff. You know,
good.
But anyway, you're growing up and you're a wrestler, you're a football player. You play basketball too? Or no, you wrestled in the basketball. Wrestled in the winter track.
Yeah. And I did some track. Yep. What actually kind of took, I did a lot of wrestling in the summertime too.
Okay.
Like the freestyle stuff, and that kind of swayed me away from baseball, especially when like I wasn't like, we had a really solid baseball team when I was growing up. So I was like, oh, I'm going to stick to what I'm good at. You know, I'm kind of a bruiser, so I'm going to do the wrestling and football thing more. Hindsight, I wish I would have done track all 4 years. Cause that, I mean, especially being like a lineman that wasn't getting a lot of looks at a lot of other schools, I mean, the track, I definitely think would have helped me out. Cause when you're at such a small school, like even if you're slightly athletic, you're going to stand out a little bit more. And the more opportunities you have doing other sports, you know, the better off you are. So,
yeah, I mean, Coach Morgan would talk about just going like recruiting people off of like how they throw the discus or something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Coach Morgan, I think, is superhuman. In fact, you'd be a good guy to ask about that. Well, yep. Talk about Coach Morgan.
I actually had an interesting experience with Coach Morgan. He didn't recruit me in high school. But he did stop by our school and kind of just chatted up to see if there were anybody there, and they brought me in there. He wasn't recruiting me or anything, but he and I talked to our line coach and athletic director at the time. He and I were talking with Coach, and they were trying to push me a little bit, like, hey, like, you know, what's the, you know, step for him? They suggested junior college. You know, I had Division III schools. I was looking at like St. Ambrose and Augustana near me to stay close to home. But, you know, I didn't really know if I wanted to go that route. And I knew that if I went the junior college route, then after I got done with junior college, those options would still be there, maybe even more so, you know, I'd have more opportunity. So I actually went to Iowa Central Community College because of, you know, what Coach Morgan suggested. Wow. And it was maybe like a 30-second interaction on that day, but it turned out that, you know, I did my thing at the junior college level and got some notice from him and got the opportunity to walk on after going that route. So
Iowa Central,
who else was there with you? Was it Zahn or Stone or was there with you?
So there's three junior colleges, and I a little JUCO lesson for you guys. There's three junior colleges in the state of Iowa. There's Iowa Western, which has kind of been the perennial powerhouse within the last 10 years. That's actually a newer school. I think not a newer school, newer football program. I think 2009 was the first year they actually had football there. And then Iowa Central is where I went. That's in Fort Dodge.
Dirty Dodge.
The Dirty D, man. But yeah, that they were good like through the 90s, early 2000s. They had the same head coach there, Kevin Twait. He was there for a really long time. He came and recruited me, pitched me that, the old, winning scheme. And, you know, junior college is tough, man, especially when you have a coach like, Kevin Twait. He was, no nonsense.
What is that experience like in contrast to Iowa City? Cause it's so different.
Oh, night and day. I mean, I thought it was the Taj Mahal coming to Iowa City and just getting to be a part of it. I mean, I grew up a huge fan too. My grandpa was a season ticket holder for University of Iowa when I was growing up. So like we would go to Iowa games every Saturday. So just getting to be in the room was like just an awesome experience for me alone.
It was one of those things where you felt, this is something that I was curious, and I'm sorry to cut you off again.
You're good.
Obviously Coach Morgan stops by, hey, I think JUCO might be the route if you want to, you know, if you want to eventually come here as a 15, 16, 17, 18 year old kid, high school. Did you have opportunities in wrestling or other sports or was it like, I want to do football. And if I could somehow make a big time, like if I could somehow make it to Iowa, I feel like that would just be a win for me. Cause I've talked, who did we talk to, Kev, who was like, oh, it's just Brandon Bishop. Like Brandon Bishop knew he wasn't going to play at Iowa, but like getting there and just being a part of the locker room was the big win for him. And he felt like, I mean, that he knew that that was his ceiling and that he was going to give everything he could. Similarly, you won the team leader award in 2012, I believe.
Yep.
And oftentimes that goes to a guy who it's hard for them to find a spot in the rotation, but man, did they fucking work hard in practice, and they're a huge part of the team. So I'm curious what that mindset was from like 15 and how that evolved through once you got to Iowa.
Yeah. Honestly, like my thought process at that time was just, I was really an open book and pretty easily influenced on, because being from such a small town, we probably had like three athletes that were the Division I caliber within 10 years, you know, so it really wasn't like a common thing. And most of those guys were walk-ons at places. We had one guy that went to a Division II school before. He's actually my boss now out here in Maryland. He was a Durant, Iowa guy.
Wow, that's weird.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah, he was a Division II player of the year. His name's Jake Soy, but like one of those guys that goes off and does that. That was a really big deal. But for me, being a lineman especially, I really was influenced by wrestling, and I was honestly looking at a lot of different schools to do both. So like the smaller school option was a thing for me, but thank goodness that I had the head coaches I did in high school. They actually kind of influenced me, like, hey, like, just try this out, because you'll still have those options afterwards. And like academically, I was okay to pretty much go wherever I wanted to, but I got my act together going that route to the junior college level too, just to get everything straightened out that way, and also just give me an opportunity to see like, okay, what level can I play at? It's a good way to gauge like where you can see yourself. Cause I was playing with guys that were going to the SEC, playing, you know, for Auburn, Bama, you know, all over the country, playing with those guys and against those guys. And if you can hold your own doing that, well, who's to say you can't go play, you know, at a higher level at Iowa. So that definitely did kind of like shine a light on a path. And like, it wasn't just Iowa either. When I grew up a huge fan, and when Coach Morgan came in the building, I'm like, hey, like, I'll do anything to go here.
Anything.
Yeah. But, you know, I talked to Coach Farley at UNI. I talked to the defensive coordinator for Iowa State, and I had opportunities to walk on at, you know, some other places. But as soon as I expressed my interest to Iowa, that ball got rolling right away. And I'm like, yeah, this is 1,000% what I want to do. You know, I honestly thought that like I had a shot, and you know, I think there were times in my career at that level at Iowa that I probably did have a chance to like kind of make a career out of it more on the field, but yeah. Some certain things happened that, you know, being at this level, it can go one or two ways. Sometimes, you know, cards just don't fall down being a walk-on, and you got to do your part, know your role. Like, I freaking loved my teammates, and I was going to do anything that I could to, you know, help us succeed. But, you know, of course everyone wants to play, but you know, it just ends up being sometimes, you know, that's not the case. So how can you improve, and how can you help out in your way? You know?
For sure, dude. Yeah. Maybe not clue, but I know what you're talking about.
I
have a really bad example of a story career path. Like I'm maybe the only, I might be the only person
in
the last 10 years of Iowa football that was just given their position without having to really earn it.
Well, cool. You're the only long snapper on the roster now. Good job.
I'll never forget the first spring ball where they asked about, they asked about like depth or something, and it was like it would have been 2014 going into the 2014 year. And they were like, well, if we don't have Kluve, we're just not kicking that day because he's the only guy on the roster. So,
I got a funny story about it. So I don't know if you remember, Coach Morgan had me go take long snaps to try and find a backup for you one summer. That might've been the same.
It would have been that year, because then that following
I'm
year,
I'm literally out there like trying to watch you. I'm like, there's no freaking way I can, if I can get it back to him, it's going to roll back there. And then
I faintly remember it. Yeah.
I wanted to be like, hey man, this is literally, if you go down, like we don't have anybody.
I think you might've said that to me. And there was a couple scenarios throughout my time there, where at one point it was like CLB who was trying to transition. Maybe I think I quite honestly think like a couple people were like, hey, you know, Kluver isn't like all the way established. Like maybe if you get really good, you could take a spot. Cause he kind of seems like a guy that might fuck something up.
No, I remember the conversation exactly. It was, I had kind of tweaked up my shoulder and my back going into senior year. And this is before camp starts. And you know how you have like your individual meetings with your position coach, like where you at, where you sit, what you need to do to like see time. And, or if it's a conversation like, hey, you're going to be a guy that just supports, and this is your role this year, you know, maybe if you kind of prove yourself on that practice squad, then we'll kind of see what happens throughout and bring you over. Anyway, the conversation goes like, you're right on the cusp right now. I want to be able to travel you because you've worked your ass off this year. Like, let's maybe find a way to like get you a backup spot just to backfill. And
we're going
to
make you a long snapper.
Yeah. I still ended up getting to travel my senior year and got on the field a little bit, but it wasn't because I got to back up Kluver. It was so.
No, luckily I never missed a snap, but
attaboy.
I think that, well, it's not that much of an accomplishment. There was, I mean, the biggest scare was maybe, I think Nebraska jumped, blocked a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
They were offsides, but the play kind of played out anyways. And I turned around and ran back to like run after everybody as they were, because if they pick it up, they could go score. Yeah. And Steve Ferentz jumped on the pile. Like it was such a dumbass move, but it was a very Steve thing to do. Just jump on the pile and like fucking hit somebody. Yep. And my arm was like kind of braced on the pile, and he jumped right on my arm and hyperextended my elbow. And I was like, okay, well, next time there's a block kick, I'll just take my ass to the sideline. Cause I am not breaking my arm or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. You talk about those conversations, and it's I find it so interesting. It's something I never had to deal with again because I was just given the position. But for someone who is on the cuffs, hey, we're trying to travel you. Hey, we're trying to get you playing reps.
Yep.
Those conversations between player and coach as a young kid, and it's definitely easier as you become a 21, 22-year-old senior. You've already been to JUCO, and now you've switched over. And maybe it's definitely a different conversation with a pre-notion of what your expectations are, what you think you're capable of doing.
Right.
You know, someone who thinks they're going to come in and start and then never gets a playing, you know, they feel like they're shorted, or, you know, versus someone who's like just trying to make it on the field and maybe thinks they can play a couple snaps. Those conversations are going to be a little bit easier. But those are hard conversations to have for a college kid. Yep. Like that's really hard to go in and talk to a coach and it's not easy for them.
Did Morgan make you like grade yourself on like certain stuff before you meeting and you go over it all?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Phil did the same thing. It can be kind of intimidating too.
Yeah. I'll tell you, like for Coach, there's nobody that I've ever had coach me that I've been like so frustrated with, but also loved so much, like just as a human being, you know? I mean, he's an old school guy, and he would say stuff that, I'll never forget some of those things that I won't repeat some of it, but like some of the stuff that he would say, it's like, holy crap, you actually just said that to me. I gotta get my shit together, because if you're saying this, then man, like I gotta do better. So
The funniest thing about Morgan is like if he would he rarely lost his temper, but sometimes he did.
Yep.
And he like 5 seconds later like apologized about it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean because he didn't want to get like down on his players, but like you know, at some point they need to get kicked in the ass a little bit.
Yeah. Kind of like along those lines, he would have some of the harshest criticisms, but he would have some of the best compliments. And it's like, when you're a guy that's a walk-on and you might not even be on the cusp of anything, like maybe you just know your role, you're going to be a scout team guy the rest of the time. But when, like, I think of like a guy like Daniel Gaffey, you know,
old Gaff,
really didn't get to see the field a ton, but he worked his tail off. But when you have a coach that takes time to acknowledge your effort in front of your peers, if it's at the end of the practice, in the meeting room, man, like that, that means so much to those guys. Speaking from experience, that's just, you know, you're re-motivated to like go do it again. Cause
yeah, absolutely. I echo that 200%.
I mean, it's cliche, but the scout team players are vitally important to the performance of the team that year.
Have to have them. Have to have them.
Yep.
You have to have those guys. If you don't have a scout team, you're fucked. Yeah. Your teammate.
Not just like, not even just guys standing over there being like dummies and stuff, but like guys giving your first teamers a look, guys that can set the tempo for the scout team that year so that you're, that the first team can like have a little bit of a practice that's humming a little bit, some energy, some juice. That makes a difference practice to practice, game to game throughout the season.
I would be willing to bet that it'd be hard to quantify too, but with somebody that knew football, if you could have someone go around like they did with the Big Ten tour in fall camp, and you could look at every Big Ten team, all 14, could be 38 after this year with conference realignment. And you looked at, you specifically keyed in on, okay, how are the scout team players? How are the look guys? How much effort do they give and what kind of intensity do they provide to the practice?
Yep.
You might be able to correlate success off of that alone. I really
1,000%. Believe that's well, at the end of the day, and this is coming from my coaching side of it. That's culture, right? That's
culture.
That's, if you have a winning culture and a winning atmosphere, like you're going to see way more success than if you have your scout team players themselves. Like, I mean, we had guys like, I remember, I mean, Jaleel Johnson was a fantastic player at Iowa. He was a scout team guy his first year. There's Faith Akakadi, same thing. Like, I was with all those guys doing,
Young 90% guys. Of freshmen are going to be scout team guys. And exactly. Some guys don't handle it very well because they're used to being the star, used to being the guy. And they kind of handle it poorly. They don't give the team, offense or defense, whatever scout team they're on, a good look. And, you know, well, the coaches see that, then they don't really, you know, transition to being a contributing player. And it really is like fascinating just watching the dynamic of the scout team.
Yeah.
General managers ask questions to find the right players. Like, do they have ice in their veins? When you're hiring, you can use Indeed assessments to make sure you find the right candidates with the skills you need. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. And with Indeed assessments, choose from 135 skills tests to help make sure you're finding applications from people with skills you need. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
If you could get every guy to come in with the mentality of, my first goal is to be a scout team all-star. Mm-hmm. I want to give max effort and I want to excel on the scout team. And that was their first goal. There was nothing higher in their head. If you could somehow block out like the actual idea of playing on Saturday, and it's just like, I just want to excel on the scout team.
Yep.
The trajectory and the sort of the development of players, I think a lot of guys' careers would turn out differently. I really believe that.
And that's kind of what gave me an opportunity to, like, I mean, had I not done what I did my first year there on the scout team, that there would have been, I probably would have been out, you know. They would have been like, hey, thanks for your time. We want to save your locker for another person. Like, see you later. But, you know, that's what gives walk-ons opportunities a lot of times. Like, if you start whooping ass on that scout team and on the practice field, like, that gets noticed. If you're getting in fights because the first team guys are getting pissed off, you know, that's good. And so the more that you're fighting as a scout team guy after the whistle's blown.
Yeah. And, you know, being defensive guys, the offensive coaches might yell at you, but you know, defensive coaches might see it from over there. They might be like, who is that?
Yep.
Ratchin? All right.
Coach Morgan, the first thing Coach Morgan said to me when we got pads on was don't let anybody disrespect you after the whistle. And if somebody tries some shit, you punch them right in the fucking face. I'm like, okay.
Okay. All right.
All right. Let's go.
I'll write that one down. Do you remember any good fights like where you're like, oh, I'm fucking brawling right now?
Were you off in the middle of a scrap?
Oh, yeah. The problem is if you're a scout team lineman and you're trying hard, you're making the offensive line like work way harder, which, you know, they should want to do that. But a lot, it's like, you know,
it could be like the Thursday practice and I need to just get out of this so I can recover till game. Sure. It's like, this motherfucker is actually making me work.
Yeah.
Right.
But like, let's say it's camp, you know, I remember that first year, and to this day, there's three offensive linemen that I will say that I dreaded going against because they were just technically so damn good. James Ferentz is the first one. I mean, I could never get underneath that guy. He was probably the first guy, but he was also the first guy to start the fight.
You know, too. He's also 6 feet tall, so that helpful when you're short.
James was a brawler, and he was also a really good wrestler, so that helped him out too. And then Brandon Sheriff, nobody ever wanted to fight that guy either. Cause he's always going to finish it.
Yeah. I would say you're just added to a long list there of guys who just didn't want any piece of that.
Yeah.
There was one day, the biggest fight that I remember was, I don't remember. Drew Ott was on scout team too at that point. And as things got kind of lost and James comes up behind Drew and just absolutely like suplexed him like from behind, like WWE.
Oh, shit.
Drew pops up and he's like, yeah, we're done. Let's go. Like,
man,
I'd say slow was a guy you didn't want to mess with either.
Yeah. He's just too nice a guy though. I mean,
So I remember like, you know, like we're playing, I forget who we're playing, but for some reason, this team had safety blitzing a lot.
Yeah.
So, like, I was in the mix with the offensive linemen sometimes, and so I had to blitz against Sloat.
Oh, yeah. And I'm like,
well, this is useless.
Yeah.
He would always, like, you know, like, finish the play. Like, you know, whistle blows, gives you the extra shove and shit, like, shoves you away. Like,
he's the ultimate finisher.
And I remember we're walking into the locker room like one day. He's like, hey, Kev, I hope you know that shuffling stuff, that don't take any of that personally. All right. That's just on the field. Like the nicest guy ever. Like the epitome of the dad of the locker room. But like just pulled me aside. He's like, hey, I just how I got to play hard inside the lines. Don't take it personally.
1000%, man.
Was there anyone more of a dad already on the team than Sloat when he played?
Hell no.
I don't think it's even close. I think if you would have told me that he had three kids, he had a full family, two dogs, a mortgage and like, you know, a several million dollar investment portfolio. I would have been like, yeah, dude. I mean, that makes sense. The guy's, he looks like
I showed up the first week and I was talking to him. He's like, yeah, I'm feel like the old guy here. Like, I like to wake up Sunday mornings, have a coffee, and read the newspaper.
Sure, yeah. He was Hawkeye Challenge team leader. He's the guy that perfected like the formula to winning it. I think with like the body weights, and he was like, that's how he picked teams. Was, like,
just don't fuck up.
Yeah, everybody to get their body weights. That's like he was the man. So
yeah. No, I mean, I remember he would be like he'd be like the last one in the locker room, just like cleaning up stuff.
Yep.
Like sweeping, like literally sweeping the sheds.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent leader.
He's a special guy. Actually, I don't know why, but he popped up on LinkedIn, on like my LinkedIn feed. I saw you actually posted a job, Kev. I might apply. Probably not. I'm not going to apply. That was a joke.
I'm not going to recommend you for that job.
Wow.
Striker gig? Join us.
Yeah. There's a gig open in Iowa City for any.
Anyone listening out there, this is a great platform, Kev, to really shout out. You could have a walk-on Army member come apply and be your subordinate.
No, this isn't even working with me.
Oh, it's not with you?
No.
Anyway, Sloat popped up on my feed and I thought, damn, he would be a great interview. We got to get him on the podcast.
He would be awesome.
Does he have kids now? Actually have kids?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I think
he still goes out. He works for like a seed company, or he did, because he comes out to my dad's farm a lot.
God, he's where's he from? Where's Slope from?
Decorah.
He is from Decorah. Yeah. God, yeah, there's no, yeah. There's no more good old Iowa boy than Brett Van Sloten. I don't think he gets any better than that.
Mm-mm.
Where was I going with that? Totally lost my train of thought. No idea. Well, you reached out to me after we reposted that that mental health episode.
Yep.
And I think that some people, and I, not to just beat a dead horse, but I think that some people are under the impression that, okay, I'll accept it. Athletes go through mental health issues, but like, it's probably only the ones that like, it was the good players, right? It was the ones who are well known and all this stuff. I'm curious what made you reach out about that episode, and also kind of your experience with being done playing football.
Sure.
And then after, like, you went into coaching, and I'm like, what was the inspiration for coaching? Was it because you wanted to stay around the game, that kind of thing? How did you deal with kind of putting the playing career behind, that stuff?
Well, what really resonated with me during that episode was actually some of my time in junior college. When I was a freshman going into that, like, I went there with the anticipation of like what you said, with the first guys coming in, you have the anticipation, you're going and make moves, you know, especially at the junior college level, it's only a 2-year program. So you're working with 18, 19 year olds, and then you should be pretty much done. So I came in with the expectation my first year, like, I'm going to be the dude, I'm going to start.
I'm the guy.
Yep. Wasn't the case. You know, I still traveled. I got a little bit of PT, but it wasn't until that spring ball where I kind of figured out, like, you know, mentality, like the actual mentality to have, like, being, you know, being the dude, being that player that you needed to be. But it was a kind of dark, you know, I was like 4 hours away from home, never been away before. It's just hard, and you're not used to that, being you're 18 and 19 a lot of times. Like, you know what hard work is, you know how to get it done, but, you know, day in, day out. And at the time too, this was back when you were actually doing two-a-days. You could still actually have full pad practice two-a-days. So it's just tough, man. And like, you kind of, in your head, you get to a place where like, can I do this? You know, like, I'm not the guy. You got to go into a place where it's like, and some guys, you know, it wasn't for them, you know, it was way too hard.
Yeah.
I think you got to kind of find that place where you can, okay, like, what's the next step that I can put forward, you know, and be able to just kind of inch by inch, just get better. Once you kind of change the focus of like, what's the situation, what's the reality? Like, here's the situation. I came to this program, I'm not doing very well right now. That's the reality of the situation. Okay, what's the next step? How do I get better? How do I improve? And then once you find that out, if you take it one step, one day by day, you know, that's when kind of, I think that mentality, you know, you kind of dig yourself out of that hole. And then at the Iowa standpoint too, you know, I mean, being a walk-on, I think, is way more difficult on your psyche than it is a scholarship player, you know, because at the end of the day, when you're a scholarship guy, you're getting your school paid for. Like, there's a lot of positives to this.
Something to fall back on.
Yeah.
Like, well,
right?
Well, I had a shitty day in practice, but hey, don't got to pay for books, you know?
Yeah. And when you're a walk-on, like, you're going through this program, and like, maybe there's some good stuff that happens at practice, but, you know, you might be neck and neck with the scholarship guy next to you. And just because that guy's on scholarship, obviously they're going to have that edge still over you. And you guys know how that goes. But then you go back to your dorm or your apartment and you're like, what the hell am I doing? I'm putting myself through all the work, all this pain, all the, you know, time spent doing this, you know, what the hell?
And paying for the privilege.
And paying for it. Yeah. But then again, I think it just kind of comes back to the grinders, the guys that find a way. And I can say this about my work life and professional life too. Like, the guys that can, all right, assess the situation, take a step back and say like, know, what's the reality of the situation? What's the truth that's going on right now? Okay. And then what's the next step? And then all you can think about, okay, here's the next step that I'm going to take. That's kind of how you pull yourself up and move along. And I know it's way harder for some people than it is for others, but you know, that episode that you posted that really struck a note with me, and I've listened to it, I don't know, maybe two times now, three times now. And I think it nails it on the head what you guys kind of talk about. Like, that is the reality of the guys that are going through the program. And then when you get done, I mean, especially when you've had to work so hard just to get to those next steps. For me, it was like, now what? You know, yeah. I went to coaching because that's what I knew. And
yeah,
I found myself as an older, and you guys can probably relate to this, as an older guy in the program, you do take on a mentor role and a leader role, especially like Kluver. I mean, you probably led most of the specialists, if yeah. not, you're not playing, you're doing the same position, but you guys, like, you were a leader in that room. So and in some capacity, you are coaching those guys and leading them.
Yeah. So I mean, especially Kluver didn't have a coach until his senior year.
Right.
Really. I felt that's actually a really good point. I've never even thought about that. Luckily, as a specialist, you do realistically have a lot less to worry about on the field. There is no playbook. There is no,
sure. There
is no real physical grind. I mean, you're out there, but it's not, you're not beat down like you were as a lineman or Kevin was as a linebacker safety.
Yeah.
But I would say in my last 2 years, I felt like, and that was before, they actually do have Coach Woods now as a full time, yep. like he's in the room. They do position meetings, stuff like that. Thank God. I'm so happy it wasn't that way when I was there, because I'm a very independent person. It's not just because I wanted to get out of longer position meetings. That was a huge benefit.
Like to play pool too, you know?
Yeah. Okay, I had to work on the pool game.
Don't play the specialists in ping pong
or pool or 2K.
Yeah.
But yeah, my role was, once I had felt, it's a weird thing too, because you have to manage it. If you want to be the guy, the all-around guy, when you're the older dude, part of that is the leadership and bringing younger guys along and showing younger guys how to make it through the program, how to be great at your specific position. But there's a balance of, okay, where in my career do I feel comfortable enough on the field? Like, I have a grasp of my shit before I can start worrying about other guys' sure. shit.
Sure.
And that was probably right in the middle. I started for 4 years. It was probably after that 2015 season when I was finally like, you know, Marshall and Dylan graduated. And I was like, well, I'm the guy now. I'm the team leader. And I was like, they called me dad. Like, I was dad of the group. Miguel, yeah. I think Miguel called me dad for 2 years. He didn't even call me Tyler.
Yeah.
God, I fucking miss Miguel.
Good dude. And,
yeah, great dude. And it does take a little bit of a mental toll on you. You have this responsibility. You have, it's like your baby. It's like your kids are the younger specialists or the younger guys in the position group. And so when you leave,
bringing it back to like what Will said, you know, you graduate and
you don't have that anymore.
Yeah, so it's another thing you don't have anymore. Yeah.
Yep.
It's like you adopted a kid and then their parents decided to take him back. It's like, well, fuck, that sucks. man. That's a good way to put it. But sorry, I made it about me there, which is what I'm really good at.
Who
were
some of the guys that, as far as like your mentors, like Kevin, like who are like the top, like, because you pick stuff from these guys, right? Like when you a major part of like the Iowa program itself is like, you know, we have excellent coaching leadership, but I think the upperclassmen really like, I'm sure that there's things that are done the same way now with the upperclassmen there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, the coaches say all the right things, give you the right
mm-hmm.
Ideas, tell you how to get from A to B. But especially as a young guy, it's really the easiest way to learn is by example. So you kind of like set your eyes on, you know, okay, who do I want to be like? And okay, I'm going to follow whatever you do. So if guys for me is like, so I was a DB first couple of years. Mm-hmm. So my freshman year, the seniors in the DB room were DJ Lowry and Tanner Miller. So I'm like, yep. I'm going to follow these guys, do whatever they do and ask them questions and literally try to be them incarnate, an 18-year-old yeah. version of them.
Yeah.
And then like another guy was like Travis Perry, you know, living the walk-on life. And then sure. by the time we got there, he was like a second string guy, but like played all four special teams. I'm like, okay, I think I can be like this guy. What does Travis do? He's out there early every time practice. Okay, I'll get out there early, work on some stuff. And that's actually one thing I got from Travis is he would always get out early and he'd work on his punt sets.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one thing I did every practice because I was like one of the first special teams I played on was the punt team. And I remember actually senior years, Wallace would come out and he was like, you know what I love about you, Ward? It's like, you've been doing this for 3 years, but you still come out here every morning, work on your punt steps and get ready for that. I didn't tell him that this though, but you know, that's something I picked up from Travis.
Yep.
I always thought that was fascinating about Iowa, and I'm sure it's at other places too, but I think it's more important at Iowa because of the developmental aspect of it. As a freshman, there is it's like a book. Yep. The seniors are giving you the book on how to do things. Because if you make it to 99% of the guys who make it to their senior year as an Iowa Hawkeye football player are there because they do things the right way. They know how to go through the shit. It's right there. That's the answer. You just follow them and I really grabbed onto that. It took me a few years to execute, but I really grabbed onto that from, you know, for me, it was Casey Kreider who was the most respected. I don't know if you could be more respected as a specialist.
No. Being a team captain as a long snapper, I mean,
wild.
And small Casey's my brother-in-law. I actually married his younger sister, Casey. Haley Kreider is my wife. So,
oh shit, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh fuck me, all right.
Oh shit. Yeah. Okay.
Real small world.
Oh shit. All right, we got fucking Will Ratchin, right? Marrying his teammate's sister. Okay. What the fuck is going on here?
All right.
Holy shit. That is funny. Mm-hmm. Funny enough.
I did not know that.
Yep.
Funny enough too. I actually put down on some of these questions while stalking your Instagram. You had a video of her lifting, I think doing some lat pull downs.
Yeah.
And you captioned it, if our kids aren't athletic, it's my fault.
1000%. My wife is an absolute specimen of a human being. She was a gymnast growing up, so she can do like all sorts of backflips and stuff. She like worked out with me. We were big like lifters and stuff before she was pregnant. So she can actually continued to go to the gym with me until
love that.
A week before that. Yeah. We went in, so yeah, she's just an absolute stud. So,
love that.
Yeah,
I love that. It's always one of the positive.
Yeah,
you
create D1 babies.
Cross our fingers, right?
Yeah, I need those need those D1 kids. No college tuition. Come on,
no 7 college tuition. That's mommy right. and daddy want to retire early.
I just want to go watch some fucking football on the weekends.
Bro. Yeah, it's for free. Get those 4 complimentary tickets. Maybe the NCAA will be fucking gone by then and you'll be able to get you can have like 8 tickets at that point or something like that.
Yeah, you know.
Kanziri and Q were two of your closer friends on the team.
Yeah.
And this is another thing that kind of intrigues me is who guys gravitate towards and become best buddies with. Because I do think it's something that maybe some people on the outside don't understand is like, everybody's teammates, everybody's friends. I would even say to like some extent, some of my teammates were more just like coworkers. Sure, I didn't talk to them at all. Especially if you're like true freshman, you're there for 4 months. I mean, some of those seniors, I don't even think, if you ask CJ Fedorowicz who Tyler Kluver was, he probably doesn't know who that is. Like that's my assumption, at least. I don't think he would remember me. I don't think some of those guys would remember me. Why those two, Kanziri and Q? What was special about them? And what were you able to learn and take away from them as athletes, but also as like friends that you made during that time?
So I actually on that mental health side, I was kind of a fuck the first week that I showed up on Iowa City's campus.
I think most of us were.
Dude, all right, I will spare some details. I got it. So it's literally day one. It's in June. I would be a red shirt. It's my red shirt year. I knew I was going to red shirt. So I would be a red shirt sophomore, right? Mm-hmm. Moved into an apartment for the summer. And I go, there's some guys on the team that are like, hey, like, let's go out tonight. I'm like, hey, I don't want to go to the bars. Like, I'm not 21 yet. Like, literally first weekend here living in Iowa City. Let's stay out of that scene. Like, oh, hey, I know a bonfire we can go to outside of the city.
So, I know exactly what this one is.
So bad. So I go to this bonfire and I hadn't been drinking yet, but I crack one and all of a sudden, woo, woo, woo. Yeah, cops show up and I'm thinking like, I've had two sips of this. Like, we're better. We have a designated driver. Like, we're all good. We're out like in the middle of nowhere. The first cop that pulls up, he's like, yeah, you guys are good to go. And then all of a sudden there's like five cop cars that roll in. And of course, like we get ticketed. And if I have any advice for my kids someday, always freaking run. Just kidding.
Run! Just run!
But no, I had to call coach. I had texted Chick that night at like midnight. Like, hey, like this happened. We got ticketed. And I won't name any of the other guys that were with me. I can tell you guys off air, but I won't incriminate them with me. But yeah, that was literally my first weekend as a Hawkeye football player. So
that's a tough start.
Talk about digging yourself a hole with Coach Doyle and Coach Ferentz, man. At 6A, it was the ladies football academy that weekend too. So Coach Ferentz tells me like, hey, come to my office at 6 a.m. Come meet me there and we'll talk. So I'm at his office. He sees me out there. I have to wait until like noon to go into his office actually and talk to him because it was ladies football academy. So I just sat there and waited. So the anticipation, I'm a walk-on junior college transfer.
Hold on a second. You waited 6 hours?
Yeah, just about that. Yeah. Yeah, I think it was like the mental thing. Like, I think he was trying to, like, get me. But I go into his office, and he had my junior college coach on the phone and basically, like, hey, is it worth keeping Will here? You know?
Wow.
And thank God my JUCO coach came to, like, come to bat for me. That like, hey, we had never done anything like that. And we kind of told coach the scenario too. Like, we were not out in the causing trouble. We literally were out at a fire outside of the, you know, parameter. We still shouldn't have been doing it. You know, we learned our lesson, but that's talk about a hole that you got to dig yourself out of right away. You know? So I was at the most negative point in my career at that point.
Yeah. That's a tough start. Tough start in the program.
I remember, I mean, talk about coaches jumping down your neck for literally, and if you messed up a rope drill, and I mean, already.
Yeah, it all comes back to, yeah.
Gosh. So, yeah, that was a long road for me to kind of recover from, but and it ended up, you know, working out in my favor. But, you know, that was a huge learning experience for the rest of my time there. Like, there were sometimes, yeah, once you were 21, guys would go out and stuff like that after celebrate a win and go to Scummit or Sports Calm or whatever and enjoy yourselves. But, you know, if you learn the hard way, you know, they're always looking for you in Iowa City, even if you're not in Iowa City. And if you're a football player and they find out, screw it. You don't even have to, like, you could have had half a beer. It does not matter. They will find you and string you up. It does not matter. So,
yeah. Generally stick out amongst the normal population.
Yep.
See, I would have been the perfect guy to go and get in trouble downtown. They would have been like, well, he's not a fucking athlete. We're good. Just move on to the next. Maybe I derailed you or you derailed yourself a little bit, but I asked about Q and
And so Kanziri. I'm in this big hole, right? Like, this is a crappy situation for me. And a dude that kind of noticed, like, I was having a day with coaches just breathing down my neck. And Jordan kind of, I mean, he was a guy that also, like, I mean, he had a hard time with that sometimes when people were kind of getting after him a little bit. So he kind of was like, put his arm around me, just like positively reinforced as a teammate. He was a guy that was like my age. So another part of being a junior college guy, you come in with, I came in with like Beathard and Kittle's class, right? So I'm 2 years older than those guys.
Than all the other new guys, yeah. Right?
And yeah. I've already had college. I've played at the college level before, you know, I've, so it's different. You're doing all this stuff with these young guys. So I'm not really vibing with everybody at that age level yet. And so Jordan kind of like gravitates. I don't know if he was put up to it by coaches or if he just saw like out of the kindness of his heart, like, man,
Jordan's kind of that dude.
Yeah. He sees that going on. And he was good buddies with like Quentin Allison and Bud Spears at the time. So I mean, we just kind of started hanging out. And at that time too, I had a college girlfriend and stuff that things were always kind of a struggle with for me on my personal side there. And they kind of just like helped get me through that too. So honestly,
good dudes,
you know, it had nothing to do with like the football side of it, really just, you know, on the mental side and just taking care of each other. That kind of just stuck with me. And, you know, we're still there for each other to this day. He was the best man at my wedding. You know, he and I coached at college together. And
then didn't you, you married Q and Josa, right?
I married Q and Josa. Yeah. I was the officiant in their wedding. Yep.
You were the officiant.
Yeah. I got ordained online and married their asses.
Holy shit. That's amazing.
Yep.
My goodness. So if anyone out there needs a, you know,
come hit see up, your boy.
I mean, he's in Maryland, but so you got to fly him out, pay for his expenses, but he can marry you. So now you're in Maryland. Yep. You're working for Stryker. Coaching didn't work out. Why didn't coaching work out? You figured out, holy shit, that's a big time commitment.
Honestly, man, I still, that's my love. Like I still kind of dabble a little bit. I volunteer my time at a high school out here.
Nice.
Shout out St. Francis Football Academy. If you guys ever watch Baltimore football, it's like a HBO documentary that they've done on St. Francis Football Academy. I don't remember the name of it. But they're legit. They're sending dudes D1 all over the place. So it was really fun to go coach them a little bit, but shout out St. Francis. So yeah, I actually got out of it. You know, the coaching grind, like I moved 3 times in 3 years. I think when I was coaching, I coached at a Division III school in Wisconsin and Milwaukee, you know, went back around, did some high school stuff around the Iowa City area. And then I went and coached junior college in Fort Dodge. And, you know, I found out like, if you're on a staff and an assistant role and your head man leaves or resigns or gets fired or whatever it is, your job's not guaranteed. You know, there's no autonomy to that stuff whatsoever, regardless of what you've produced as a coach or how you vibe with your teammates. It doesn't matter. If the new guy comes in, the new head coach comes in and wants to hire new guys, that's what happens. You know, it doesn't matter if you played at that program in the past or whatever, like what happened to me at Iowa Central. Like, you know, unfortunately I didn't get to stay there. Once the new guy came on, he brought in new staff, and that's just the nature of the beast, you know? So that took me time. Like I just started talking to Haley and I'm like, man, like I can actually see myself having a family someday. Do I want to have to move kids across the country, you know, work for literally scraps? So when I was a GA, I made $200 a month and I got a school stipend. I didn't even get my entire grad school paid for. I got a stipend. So I'm literally like eating an apple with some peanut butter and then maybe some ramen at night if I'm lucky in my first year of coaching, you know, like, okay, how long can I live like that? And there's some guys that can do it, and there's some guys that get lucky and knows. And one of the things about coaching too is like it's all about who you know a lot of times.
A lot of relationship based, yep.
Yeah. And luck, I mean, I'm confident that if I would have stuck it out, you know, I would have been somewhere that I wanted to end up and would have had a good route. But hindsight is 2020, you know, with this last year during COVID, I know a ton of guys that I work with that didn't have jobs for a year and had to go find something else. And I guarantee you, I would have been in that same boat coaching Division II somewhere as a graduate assistant, you know, just doing the same thing. And hell, that would have been no way to, you know, support a wife and a new kid. So
yeah,
hindsight's 2020. I'm glad I got out when I did. And I absolutely love the company that I work for now. And
you know, right, baby.
Yeah, represent, man. A little different divisions. I don't know, like, how you do what you do, Kevin. You're a special man to be able to go do the orthopedic realm, but
built different, baby. Built different, but it's still the same culture.
Yep, that's right.
The answer to that question is Kevin is a fucking psychopath.
Yeah, he is a little bit. How's the quota looking this year? Are we hitting bonuses?
No, I'm trying to, man. I just started my territory in March, so it's a little.
Oh, you just got your territory this year?
Yeah.
Congrats, man. That's big time.
Appreciate it. So it's been a fun learning curve, and it's great to meet new people and all that stuff. So
how would you describe the transition / the benefits of playing D1 sports working in med tech?
Oh, dude, like the time management, like that's the biggest thing for me, because especially like you might have, especially in like if you think of like a trauma rep that has, you don't know when the next sudden change is going to come.
Yeah.
You might have like a surgery going on that you're in.
I got time
to go home and eat. Like, oh, nope, got a call. I got to go.
Cut 85.
Keep food in the car. Keep some bars in the car.
How it is, man. Like, but for me, like that was one of the hugest things, was definitely the time management side of it. And I think coaching honestly helped me out more than actually playing did. Cause one thing that kind of gets unnoticed on the college coaching side is like the recruiting side of it. Like you are literally, if you want to be a salesperson, you have to be able to relate to people. And there's no more harder sale than recruiting a kid to come to play football for you for a team that didn't win a game the year before, you know?
Yeah. That's a tough sale to make, boys.
That's not easy.
Yeah. So, you know,
yeah, if you can sell that, you can sell anything that Stryker makes. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. Having that experience definitely helped me out a ton. So,
yeah.
Favorite memory from your time in the black and gold before we let you go? You got dad responsibilities.
Yeah. The first time I got to actually get on the field and play, you know, there's like three things that stick out. It was against Northwestern. We were sticking it to them in 2014.
Mm-hmm. My first game as well.
Yep. And so I was actually playing D end at the time, and Coach Morgan asked like, hey, like we're going to get you in today. Would you be comfortable playing D tackle again? I'm like, yeah, just whatever I got to do to get on the field.
Coach, I'll play quarterback. I don't care.
Yeah. Well, I don't give a shit. Like, let's go. And, you know, I'd been on the field previously, like when they were taking a knee, coaches sent me out there to go fucking take a knee with the guys. Like, that's fine or whatever. But I knew I was going to get some snaps. So I'm like, yep, let's go. Played some D tackle, and it was the first series I'd ever been in. And the first play I'm in, I get a TFL.
Let's go.
And the whole state, like it's towards the end of the game. We're sticking it to North. Like, it's not 70,000 people anymore. It's more like 30,000, you know?
Sure.
I can hear my mom and dad hooping and hollering. Like, that was like the coolest day.
That's amazing.
Oh, man, like, that's
all
awesome.
That work, like everything finally paid off, and I can hear my family just going absolutely freaking nuts in the stands. And then you hear your name on that loudspeaker, tackle for a loss, you know, Will Rajan, 87. It's like, holy shit, you know? But yeah, that was definitely the best memory. And then going over to Coach Morgan on the side. And this is another reason why, like, a lot of my coaching side that I'm also trying to coach because of this, but having that feeling for him, like I can see him crying and he gives me a big hug and he's like, this is what it's all about type of thing. Like having, like, we won the game and he's happy or whatever, but having a guy that like worked his tail off just to get to that spot, you know, that was incredible. You know, having that, like, seeing that coach, like, who probably doesn't need to be as proud as he is of a guy like me, you know, that was really cool as a player to see your coach be that, you know, thoughtful. So
yeah, no, that's totally awesome.
That's a fucking awesome story. That's a great way to end the podcast. Well, Will, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Keep up the good work. Love listening.
Yeah, we just exploit our former teammates for content. So we enjoy you adhering to that. So I'm not sure what episode this will be, listeners. We might do another one later today, and then who knows where they'll end up this Monday, Thursday. But thank you, guys. Hopefully you enjoyed Will. You learned a new Hawkeye. It's always fun to tell our teammates stories and reminisce on some memories and the good times. So thanks, Will, again, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.